I am Plant Online. This is thecommentary.ca. In a new book, James Hogan with investigative journalist Richard Littlemore reveal how the so-called debate over climate change is in fact manufactured and bogus. They contend that the energy industry has influenced public opinion and hoodwinked the media. James Hogan is a longtime public relations expert and is a president of James Hogan & Associates, a firm here in Vancouver. He is the chair of the David Suzuki Foundation and is a trustee of the Dalai Lama Center for Peace and Education. He created the noted website Desmog Blog, which identifies unethical PR tactics by people attempting to confuse the public on climate change. In the book, Climate Cover-Up, The Crusade to Deny Global Warming, Mr. Hogan and Mr. Littlemore reveal secret memos from industry and more. James Hogan joins me now. The book is published by Greystone, and on its cover is a line from Leonardo DiCaprio, who calls the book an imperative read for a successful future. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, James Hogan. Good morning, Mr. Hogan.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Before we get into what the other side is doing, for our reference, what are the fundamentals? What's incontrovertible when it comes to the climate change debate? It's serious. It's causing trouble already. And if we do nothing, it'll mean doom. I mean, that's where you're coming from?
Where I'm coming from is that every major scientific academy in the world, NASA, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the National Academy of Sciences in the United States, the Royal Society in the UK, the Royal Society of Canada, the list just goes on and on. All of these prestigious scientific institutions around the world say that the climate is changing, man is influencing it, and it's serious. And they've been saying that for well over a decade, certainly since the early 90s. And over time, the science has gotten stronger and stronger. But the media coverage and the debate about whether or not it's actually even happening has kind of in parallel become more confusing and more focused on this, yes, it's happening, no, it's not happening. So this isn't something that's taking place in science. It's something that's taking place in popular media.
And when was it that you became hip to it?
I became aware of this about 5 years ago when I read a book called Boiling Point. Part of that book looks at this, what I would call a confusion campaign that has been put together by the energy industry, mainly in the United States, but in Canada as well and in Europe. And, you know, as we learned more about it, it was just so outrageous that we just thought, people need to know about this. People in public life, in particular, people in the media and in government, need to be asking these people whether or not they're taking money from industry and where they actually get their supposed climate expertise, because most of these guys have no credentials in climate science.
So, I mean, I hate to call it, well, is it a conspiracy, do you think?
No, it's an industry.
Yeah.
It's not a conspiracy. It's basically industry associations and industry front groups, fake scientists and unscrupulous public relations companies that have put together this massive campaign. It's hundreds of millions of dollars have been spent on this campaign over the last two decades.
And some of the important players, you reveal those in the book.
Yes.
Who are they?
Well, let me give you a few names here. The Competitive Enterprise Institute, the Fraser Institute in Canada, the Friends of Science in Canada, the Cato Institute in the United States, the American Petroleum Institute, to some degree the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. There was a very interesting group in the early 90s that was put together by Philip Morris, funnily enough. And this group was basically, they were fighting secondhand smoke legislation. And particularly at this time, they were trying to fight regulations to prevent smoking in public transportation. And that was right around the time that people were stopping smoking, governments were passing these regulations, and the cigarette industry had lost its credibility. By there was, you know, famous television coverage of the CEOs of tobacco companies lying to Congress. And so this, so Philip Morris put together this group called the Advancement of Sound Science Coalition, and they invited other businesses, 20,000 other businesses, to join them. And Exxon was one of those businesses that joined them. So rather than just fighting secondhand smoke legislation, they're also fighting climate science and legislation to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. All under this public relations strategy of trying to raise doubt in people's thinking about whether or not the science was sound. So it became kind of a war, an industry war on science, aimed at basically protecting industrial interests, business interests.
And it obviously has to do with the fact that to them it's worth a lot of money, right?
Absolutely. Billions. Yeah. So spending hundreds of millions is a good investment in the billions of dollars that you'll save if whatever legislation that's passed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions is weaker. In Canada, we basically don't really have legislation or public policy federally to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Our federal policy will increase greenhouse gas emissions. And most people who pay close attention to the climate legislation that's sitting in the Senate right now, that's going to be debated actually this week in Washington, feel that that legislation is quite weak as well.
So what are some of the misconceptions that they're putting out there, the science that they're putting out there, the experts that they're putting out there?
Well, there's a variety of them, but over the years they try anything. I mean, one of the most recent ones is this whole idea that of global cooling, that it's actually, or that the oceans are actually not warming, both of which are completely untrue. But yet these people, it's that old kind of saw that if you repeat a lie often enough, people start to believe it. That's basically what these folks rely on, is big budgets, the ability to kind of have their message almost create an echo chamber with right-wing media in the United States and to a lesser degree in Canada, where people just keep repeating this global cooling message till you start talking about it around the water cooler. And if you talk to a legitimate climate scientist, they'll say, well, it's ridiculous. And yet these folks, they just keep saying it sort of unabashedly, misleading people about climate science.
What I found fascinating was the clever use of language, some of the words that they use, rather than the words that, you know, the words that are just set out to confuse people, I suppose.
Well, global cooling would be a good example. Junk science, the whole idea, or sound science, that phrase was the result of $100,000 plus focus group work. These things, there are people, there's a fellow in the United States, his name is Frank Luntz.
Yeah.
He was one of the early, he's basically a language specialist, and he was one of the early advisors to the Republican Party on dealing with global warming. And his advice to the Republican Party was to continue to kind of raise the issue of the science not being settled. The science is still open on this issue, and basically helping, advising Republican Party to sell doubt about climate science after the science was fairly solid.
Now you're in public relations. You've seen polls, I'm sure. Well, what do people think? Are they generally believers in climate change, or are there a lot of skeptics still out there?
There's a lot of skeptics still out there. But I think in Canada, most people, you know, understand that it's happening, but they don't know actually what it is. And I think with these people out there dominating the airwaves and media, what you, instead of people actually learning what climate science is saying about climate change and how climate change works and what it is we need to do about it, the media gets dominated by these fake debates about, you know, whether or not it's actually happening. In the United States, there was a recent poll of Americans by the Pew Center, and in their poll, they found that over the last 2 years, there's been a 14% reduction in the number of Americans who believe that climate change is happening. That is the direct result of campaigns by the Americans for Clean Coal Electricity Group that put together a clean coal campaign over the last couple of years, and the American Petroleum Institute, and people there was a campaign, a front group in the States called Hot Air. It was basically a campaign that rolled across the United States, and I think it was put together by Americans for Prosperity, but another kind of right-wing interest group. And these groups get out there and pound this drum of climate change not really that it's not really happening, or that it's just natural variations in weather, or some other kind of theme like that, or that any kind of legislation to try and reduce greenhouse gas emissions is going to drive the cost of energy through the roof, scaring people. Something certainly that's not true. And essentially, by feeding this misinformation, you get more and more Americans kind of backing away from any suggestion that they should be doing something significant to curb greenhouse gas emissions. So these guys are highly effective. But what they're doing is based on misinformation and highly skilled public relations messages and public relations people, and then these scientists for hire. We had a lot of difficulty over the past 4 years finding a legitimate climate scientist who said that climate change wasn't happening, who wasn't on the payroll of coal or the oil and gas industry.
Do people ask you about your own agenda, who are your clients are, and where you get your funding?
Yeah, there are some people who are asking me that question. I mean, there's people who, you know, wonder where I'm coming from. The money for this blog and for this book comes from, there's no industry funding of this. It's funded by myself and a friend of mine, John Lefebvre, and the Rockefeller brothers have put some money into it, a foundation in the U.S., Gordon Roddick has put some money into it. He's the owner of the Body Shop. So it's, you know, and our funders are basically on DSmog blog. So we're quite transparent about that. And it really isn't, this kind of book is not really a business book. It would be hard to argue that there's some kind of business interest here that's being protected. I mean, I think that's an argument that people try and throw at me to try and discredit me, but there's no legitimacy to it.
Now, when we see stories in the media or just a mood in the media about not necessarily scaring us about climate change or misinforming us on it, when we hear that it'll cost a lot, that changing our lives dramatically will just be horrendous for us in terms of costs and so on and so forth. Is that one of the tactics that the industry is using?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's been a highly effective one, too, in the United States, scaring people into thinking that they're going to be paying, that essentially that the climate legislation is going to be resulting in $4 a gallon gas. So those things work. You know, they scare people. And basically what it does is water down any kind of effort to pass strong climate change legislation.
Did you find that people out there, the media consumer, that they're finally getting hip to the fact that there's misinformation out there, do you think?
I don't know. We haven't really done, or I haven't seen any research on that, but it'd be very interesting after we've finished this book tour to see whether or not it's had that kind of an impact where people are starting to be more skeptical.
Well, when you talk about the media and the complicity of the media, do you think it's a symptom of the state of the media that there are just so few resources out there, or do you think it's laziness that they've been able to have been coerced into this?
I think it's a combination of shrinking newsrooms and fewer reporters with less and less time. But at the same time, there is a problem with science literacy. There is a problem There is a problem with time, though, where you have people in newsrooms who are just overworked. So they resort to simple models for reporting, like, you know, one person saying and such, and then another person disagreeing with them, which is a good model. I mean, we do want to find out what people think, and, you know, covering the kind of different points of view on issues is important. But when it comes to science, it's a bit different, and you need to spend more time asking about the credentials of the people and the financial affiliations of the people who are suggesting that climate change isn't happening, especially when they're disagreeing with the bulk of the world's climate scientists.
Now, so that's something that the consumer should do. Ask about, do research into it. Did you find that they will do that, though? That they will seek information?
I think we just basically have to, as you know, as ordinary citizens, we have to demand more of the media, of business leaders and government, and we have to be encouraging reporters whenever, you know, people are constantly emailing responses to. I'm sure you get all sorts of responses to the radio shows that you do. And I think that we as individual citizens need to give feedback to reporters saying, you know, why are you not asking these tough questions about who's paying this guy? Or, you know, whether or not they actually are doing climate science? Because most of these people would never make it past those questions. There's a guy right now who just finished a tour of Canada named Christopher Monckton, the Lord Christopher Monckton. The guy is just like, he should be a character in some kind of strange comedy, but instead he's on the speaker circuit for the Fraser Institute and for the Friends of Science, you know, telling Canadians that climate change isn't happening, that we're actually going through a cooling period, that this is all some kind of big conspiracy by scientists who are looking for funding for their research. But if you ask the question about, has this guy taken money for his tour from industry-funded groups, the answer is yes. And so he has money connections to industry, plus he has no expertise in climate science. He's a journalist. He has no significant scientific background, certainly not any PhD, and he's not publishing any climate science. So he's not really a legitimate expert on climate science, but he's treated that way across the country by reporters. I think that's a combination of laziness and sloppiness.
Now, you write in the book that reading this book might affect one's faith in humanity. How has writing the book affected your own faith in people?
I would say writing the book and doing the research has made me and my co-author, Richard Littlemore, really angry. And I just shake my head at the extent that these people have gone to dupe us and how effective they've been. You know, I'm a very positive guy, so I think, for me, I think that deceit loses its power over us when we know about it. So our whole purpose behind writing this book was to just create public awareness, and we think that public awareness will drive these people off the public stage because they don't deserve to be there.
Jim, it's been a pleasure talking to you. This is a thought-provoking and timely book. Continued good luck with it.
Thank you.
The website for more is desmogblog.com. The book is called Climate Cover-Up, The Crusade to Deny Global Warming. It's published by Greystone, co-written with Richard Littlemore, the author, James Hogan on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plano.